You're on the money. The daily talk show making the most out of your finances. On the Money features advice from local experts on building wealth, saving and investing, and homes and loans. And now, your host for On the Money.
Good evening, I'm Gary Pomerantz. I'm here with my colleague Hayden Traub, and you're listening to On the Money, our weekly radio show airing from 6 to 7 each Monday, addressing timely topics of concern to those interested in growing and protecting their wealth.
And this is Hayden Traub. I'm a CFA and have an MBA and have been a practicing investment manager for the past 22 years. Also the principal of my own firm, Traub Capital Management, based here in Needham. If you'd like more information, you can go to www.traubcapital.com.
And this is Gary Pomerantz. I've been a certified financial planner and investment advisor for over 14 years. I'm the managing director of Lexington Wealth Management, a boutique investment firm based in Lexington, Mass. For more information about our firm, please visit our website at www.lexingtonwealth.com. Before we begin, our lawyers have forced us to let you know that the opinions expressed during our show tonight are ours and not the opinions of our respective firms, except for Hayden, because he is his firm. Also, any information we provide tonight should and cannot be construed as advice specific to your own portfolio. Specific advice can only be rendered after Hayden or I had a thorough understanding of your overall financial situation, which absolutely could not happen within the time constraints of the show.
So anyway, normally we start off the program with a recap of what's happened the past week and also what's coming up in the next week. And so the first thing I would note is for the first time in like a month, the markets didn't go crazy either up or down. The market was only up, using the S&P, for example, I was up 0.25% today. So nice and calm. I think everybody's on vacation this week, including Gary and I to some extent. And so it was a quiet day, but that's fine. A little quiet, it's good once in a while. And the other thing of note, as we're talking about returns anyway, is we finished this second quarter, with a great quarter. I mean, I don't know the last time the markets were up this big in a quarter, but for the S&P 500 last quarter, meaning the second quarter, it was up 16%, which is huge.
That's an amazing return.
And obviously people are feeling a lot better about that. And it's actually the first quarter that was up since the third quarter of 07. So we have to go back a long way to see a positive quarter. On the downside, this past 3 weeks, we've had negative returns. And so some of the gains that we picked up in the first parts of the quarter have started to erode. And we're off to a little bit of a slow start this quarter, but still early. And
I've got my fingers crossed.
Yeah, there you go. There's news last week on the consumer confidence came out, which was somewhat disappointing. Confidence dipped a bit. And probably the one that really set the market flying, unfortunately, in the wrong direction was the non-farm payroll report, which came out at down 467,000. So that means 467,000 fewer jobs, and that's always a bad thing, obviously. And the day that came out, the market was down, I believe, about 3%, and that really was kind of what set the tone for last week. And unemployment now is up at 9.5%, and most experts are projecting that we're going to get up to double digits, unfortunately. So the jobless situation is not good at the moment, job claims and unemployment.
But when you say double digits, you're not thinking that they're high double digits. Most, I think, are thinking low double digits, somewhere in the 10, 11% range. But we're not going to hit 25% unemployment like during the Great Depression.
Right, that's what happened during the Depression. We don't want to see that ever again. But yeah, I agree. I would say most experts are looking at low double digits, probably not even as high as the teens. And again, as we've mentioned in the past, that doesn't necessarily mean, from an investor's point of view, that that's bad news, because unemployment is typically a lagging indicator, meaning that by the time unemployment peaks, the market has probably already hit its bottom and is on its way back. And so that all of that relates to the fact that investors in the stock market generally are looking forward 6 to 9 months. And so they want to know, you know, what's going to happen in that time frame as opposed to what's been reported, you know, last quarter or two quarters ago.
One thing I've been reading more and more about, though, in the journal and in the Times is the concept that this might be a jobless recovery.
Right.
You know, that it's going to be a long time before the employment numbers get to the point where, you know, we're back to 5% employment.
Right.
And what there was a really interesting article in the Wall Street Journal, I think it was last Friday or last Thursday, which was mentioning that the relationship between employment and inflation is, you know, yeah. one that's probably worth mentioning, that at 5% unemployment, there's a chance you could end up with, you know, a serious amount of inflation,
right.
but rather unlikely when you have 10%
right.
unemployment since wage growth is such a high percentage of the overall inflation.
Right, right. Yeah, the wage growth often drives inflation. That's what we saw in the 70s, for example, along with obviously oil prices going crazy. But yeah, so you know, we've talked quite a bit about inflation becoming a problem, and I think it still has that potential. But because of the poor employment situation, it probably isn't going to happen in the next 6 months, maybe even next year. But we still run that risk. But I agree, that's an important note, that we probably won't see inflation anytime in the near future.
And also, the time to buy cheap inflation protection is before inflation rears its ugly head.
Exactly.
So I think in this regard, what that might mean is that it might be time to buy if we believe that, in fact, inflation is coming, but it's not imminent.
Right.
This is a good time to pick up, for instance, Treasury inflation protected securities at a better value.
Right. I totally agree. And coming up this week, consumer credit report is coming out, and that's actually expected to be down $7.5 billion. So consumers are paying off debt at a pretty good clip. And some people view this as a negative when they talk about the savings rate going up to 6 or 7%, because obviously if consumers aren't spending, then that's bad for retailers and anybody that's kind of touching the consumer. But it's good probably long term for the health of the economy, because it really doesn't bode well when your economy has no savings from consumers, you know, that they're spending everything they make. And that was the case for quite a few years. And so I would say going back to the more normal levels of 6 to 7%, somewhere around there, which is where we're at the moment, is probably a good thing for the economy and overall for the health of the economy.
You have to ask yourself, though, with the fiscal stimulus, whether or not, if people are saving at such a much higher rate, whether the gains from the stimulus will in fact be realized.
Right.
If people are taking the money and pocketing it instead of getting out there and spending it.
Right. Well, that's helping boost the savings rate for sure, I would say. And the question is, will that continue? In other words, will we keep that high, sort of high savings rate once the stimulus and rebates and various programs start to go away? And there's actually been discussion over the weekend. Biden was saying that they've misread the economy, and that, you know, I would say he's starting to make waves about having another stimulus program come through, which I think will be very tough to get through Congress. I think Congress is feeling that they've spent enough money. Let's see what sticks.
We also are really unsure whether or not he was told to say that or he just said it,
right.
which could also be a problem.
Good point. One of the things we talked about in the past is very recently was the Treasury bubble. Are we in a Treasury bubble? And the interesting thing on that note is that Treasuries have been the worst place to invest over the last quarter. So we told you so, sort of. last quarter they were down, kind of a broad Treasury index was down about 3%. And I think that's notable, again, kind of supporting our point that Treasuries are safe because you're going to get your money back if you hold them to maturity. But if you're just owning a Treasury bond fund or something, you know, like that, you can lose money. And if you mark to market the bonds, even if you hold them to maturity, they're going to be priced lower. And that's the risk. And we're starting to see that risk come home to roost.
Yeah, which given, you know, the focus of our last week's show, it was very interesting to see all of that. And, you know, coming forward.
Yeah. So we're coming up now on earnings, what they call earnings season. That's the other big upcoming news. Wednesday is the first company that reports. Alcoa is always the first one to report, if our listeners didn't know that. And so we're going to start to see the earnings reports come out starting Wednesday, and they'll come out in droves starting really next week and for the next few weeks. And I think that's critical for where the market goes from here, because if we don't get the earnings recovery that's kind of priced into the market, then, you know, I think we're going to see a sell-off to some degree. And if we get the earnings, you know, if the earnings come through as good or maybe even better, which is feasible, then I think we're going to see a big rally. And so although the market is kind of slow and trading volume is being reported as very low, for those who follow that, I think one of the things we're going to see over the next week or two is probably some volatility in the market, because the earnings are hard to predict right now for the people who cover these companies, and we're going to probably get a bunch of surprises, and some of them are going to, you know, send the market moving.
Yeah, I think that's right, although I'm not so sure we're going to have surprises all in the same direction.
No, absolutely. They never are, of course. Right. But yeah, and the reality is most of the surprises historically are positive, because companies kind of manage their earnings where they have some discretion. So, you know, if the companies come in with at expectations, that probably won't be good enough. People have started to kind of get higher hopes for a recovery and a rebound in earnings. And I think we better get some pretty good earnings reports, or you're going to see a sell-off next week. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Now, that doesn't necessarily mean in the very short term that you should be doing anything with your portfolio except maybe rebalancing. So on to the focus of tonight's show. The focus is going to be portfolio asset allocation. When you set out to create an investment portfolio, what should you be thinking about? Today we'll discuss the nuts and bolts of putting together an investment portfolio, first stocks and then bonds and then cash, and finally putting it all together in the wake of the market meltdown.
Management is an investment advisor offering investment management and planning for individuals, families, and small businesses. Traub Capital Management's founder, Hayden Traub, is a chartered financial analyst with 22 years of global investing experience. Traub Capital Management is focused on determining the needs for each client and then maximizing returns relative to risk. For a complimentary review of your portfolio, call 781-453-3929 or visit our website at traubcapital.com.
What's up, man? How you doing?
I'd be great if my progress weren't constantly stifled by this outdated Play School appliance.
If you're having computer troubles, you should do what my friend did. He had an IT professional take a look at his.
Yeah, and I'm sure he's just made of money.
You don't need to be made of money, dude. Arrow IT installed all the latest virus and spyware protection at a price that fit his budget. They even reconfigured his whole setup.
Yeah, see, but I use my computer for more than just web surfing. It's not a toy. I do all my business from it, and I really can't afford to be without it.
Arrow IT can help your business, too. They design logos, websites. They even designed my buddy a new home office.
Well, that's fantastic, but running a business takes more than just a flashy logo. You also need to get your name out there so you can attract potential customers.
Did I mention that Arrow IT also helped my buddy get his website in all the top search engines?
Oh, really? How do I reach these people?
Arrow IT Solutions is your one-stop shop for custom technology solutions for your home or business. For more information or to set up an appointment, call 413-219-4088 or visit us on the web at aroitsolutions.com.
Gary Pomerantz, Managing Director of Lexington Wealth Management, is a certified financial planner and investment manager. He has been successfully leading clients through wealth transitions such as retirement, inheritance, or sale of business for over 14 years. If these turbulent times have left you in need of a comprehensive review of your financial strategy and condition, please contact Mr. Pomerantz to set up a complimentary consultation at 800-626-1566. That's 800-626-1566.
Number one Italian restaurant, number one fine dining, and number one lunch in the area. Those are just a couple of the accolades Bella Costa Restaurant has earned in the Reader's Choice Metro West newspaper. Bella Costa, a family-owned restaurant since 1986. With quality food, great prices, and unsurpassed hospitality, Bella Costa has earned the best of the best for Italian dining and excellence 6 years running. Bella Costa's warm personal service creates a home-like atmosphere. Bella Costa's chef, owner, and staff use only the freshest ingredients, top quality meats, and fresh seafood delivered daily. Bella Costa can host your function, baby shower, wedding reception, or family gathering in their function room and can custom make your menu from their generous menu offerings. Bella Costa will be sure to attend to your every need and make that function the one you remember. Bella Costa can cater your event wherever you choose. Bella Costa, 147 Constituent Road, Framingham. That's in the Colonial Shopping Center, where Routes 126 and 30 intersects. Bella Costa, easy to find, easy to remember, and always quick to return.
Hi again, you're listening to On the Money with my co-host Gary Pomerantz, and I'm Hayden Traub. I have my own firm here in Needham, and if you're interested, you can see information at traubcapital.com. And let's talk about what we're going to focus on for the rest of the show, which, as Gary mentioned early on, is portfolio asset allocation. So asset allocation is figuring out kind of the big picture things for your portfolio. This relates to, you know, stocks, bonds, cash, and then the pieces within that, subsets within that. And what we're going to start this session with is the big piece, which at least big for most people, is the stock portion. In the next session, we're going to talk more about bonds and cash. And so on stocks, the biggest piece is, ironically, large cap stocks. So we're going to focus on that for a few minutes right now. And when we talk about large cap companies, that's a bit of a technical term. So we thought we'd explain what that means for companies that are, let's say, over $2 billion. And there's really no magic cutoff, but we're gonna use that for tonight. And how do you define what the market cap is? How do you get to that $2 billion or more?
Right. And cap is actually short for capitalization.
Thanks, Gary. more jargon. So anyway, the way you would figure out the value of a company is it's the number of shares times its market price, the price it's trading at. So if you had 1 million shares outstanding for a company and it was trading at $10, then that would be $10 million market cap, or market capitalization, as Gary corrected me. And so there's different indexes that kind of track these different large cap stocks. The biggest one, or most popular one, I should say, is the S&P 500, and one that we talk about quite a bit, actually. And so that's one of them. There's others like what's called the Russell 1000 Index. And as you can kind of guess from the names of the indices, the large cap index, the S&P 500 that I mentioned, is 500 of the largest companies. Now, it's not the largest, but it's 500 companies that are fairly sizable in their market value. And the Russell 1000 is actually typically the largest 1,000 companies at the time that Russell, the company that creates this index, puts together their index. And so that's a couple of the more popular large cap indexes.
Mm-hmm. In addition, you would want some small company stocks in your portfolio. Small companies are typically worth less than $2 billion when you multiply their outstanding shares of their stock times the number of shares outstanding in the marketplace. Small companies are riskier than large companies, but including a portion of up to 30% in your portfolio actually provides the same risk as a 100% large company portfolio, but with a greater return. And that's because they don't always move in the same direction as large company stocks. And they don't always move at the same time as large company stocks. So there's a reason to have both of those in your portfolio. And even if you are a very conservative investor and you don't want to have small companies in your portfolio because you perceive them as being riskier, you still want them in your portfolio. Because if you had a complement of, say, even between 10 and 20% of them in your portfolio, you could actually serve to decrease your risk and increase your return. So you could actually have your cake and eat it too. It doesn't work all the time. When the market moves down all at once, your small cap stocks are going to fall farther. Sorry, I was just got my Boston accent in there. Is going to fall farther than your large company stocks typically. And so it could hurt you if everything is moving down at the same time as sort of a systematic market meltdown. But in most other sawtooth markets, it actually does help you. And small caps can move at greater degrees on the way up than large caps, or to lesser degrees on the way down.
And one thing I would add on the small cap, smaller company stocks, is those are going to be tied more to the domestic economy, the U.S. economy, typically. Right. The larger companies, the companies that are, say, in the S&P 500, are more likely to be global in nature and will have exposure overseas. So if you think about the biggest companies in particular, you know, companies like Coke and McDonald's, they have huge overseas operations, actually bigger than they do here in the U.S. And so that's more of the profile of the larger companies, is you're going to get some international exposure through the large company stocks, and you're going to get more of a domestic exposure through the small company stocks. But since we're talking about international exposure, let's move on to that as another piece of the international.
But first, in the event that you wanted to purchase some small cap exposure, small company exposure, you could access that by purchasing the Russell 2000 Index, either in an ETF, which stands for Exchange Traded Fund, or a mutual fund. And the Russell 2000 index is the 2000 smaller companies and the index outside of the 1000 larger ones. So after you got through the first 1000 large companies, they would be the 2000 next smallest companies.
Right. And just to take it back one step for a minute, the reason we're even talking about all this tonight is the fact that a lot of people, or not a lot, some people focus on just kind of big company stocks or an S&P 500 fund and have most of their money kind of very concentrated in one area. And the idea that we think is important to keep saying to people is it's important to diversify and it's important to get the asset allocation right. Because if you get the asset allocation right, that's really going to drive most of the portfolio's returns. And when we say asset allocation, it means, you know, how much you have in each of these different asset classes that we're talking about, large cap, how much in small cap. And now the next area that we're going to introduce is international equities or international stocks. And again, you're going to get some exposure to the international economies through particularly the larger companies, but you're going to miss out on a whole world of global world-class companies if you don't have direct international exposure as well. So, you know, one, just to throw a name out there, Nokia, which everybody knows from the cell phone company. And that is a stock that is very global in nature as well, but it happens to be headquartered outside of the U.S., actually in Finland. And we could go through a whole list of them, but the key is that those companies will also be tied to some degree to their local economies or European economy or economies, let's say, that are outside the U.S., and that's the key. And just like we talked about with small cap companies, smaller size companies, international gets you the diversification the same way. Even if you view it as riskier because of the currency risk, a lot of times by having a mix of international mixed in with your larger companies or smaller companies, you're going to wind up getting good diversification out of that.
When Hayden mentioned currency risk, what he means is that depending upon the strength of the United States dollar, you could have equal returns in Europe and in the United States, but if the dollar is running high, it's going to take more European more European currency to buy those dollars, so you'll get a weaker return overseas. And if the dollar is low, you'll get a greater return. If you had equal returns in both places, the international piece would outweigh. So you have another kind of diversification, a currency diversification. Also, you have the risk of political instability, which right. You know, usually we don't have here in the United States. And so you were taking on a couple extra kinds of risk, but not really maybe in emerging Europe and maybe in emerging markets, you have political instability risk. But I would argue in Western Europe, you're not really looking at any political instability risk.
In the developed markets, it's not a big issue.
And to small companies, international small companies also, you know, about a 20% exposure could actually serve to decrease your risk and increase your overall return, just like in small companies in the United States. And these would be small companies which are embedded in your developed countries. We aren't yet talking about emerging markets, which also need to be a piece of the overall portfolio.
And just to clarify, developed countries really refers primarily to Japan and Europe, developed Europe. And emerging markets, which we'll talk about now, are really related to developing countries. The biggest ones that people talk about are known as BRIC, Brazil, Russia, India, and China. China seems to be a very popular one. And then there's other alternative investments, which we won't get into because of the length of time it would take, but that includes things like real estate and commodities. When we come back from break, we're going to bring in our guest. His name is Dan Pierce. He's a vice president at State Street Global Advisor and a portfolio manager there. And one of the things we're going to talk about after the break is, you know, we've just introduced all these different asset classes. You know, what are the ones that are most appealing to invest in? You know, should you have extra exposure in one area than another right now, given the valuations? And if you're interested in calling in to ask questions or talk about it, you can call 888-205-2263. Again, 888-205-2263. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Thank you.
Traub Capital Management is an investment advisor offering investment management and planning for individuals, families, and small businesses. Traub Capital Management's founder, Hayden Traub, is a chartered financial analyst with 22 years of global investing experience. Traub Capital Management is focused on determining the needs for each client and then maximizing returns relative to risk. For a complimentary review of your portfolio, call 781-453-3929 or visit our website at traubcapital.com.
You too can be successful at real estate investing. The Eastern Massachusetts Real Estate Investors Association provides a networking and educational venue for both new and seasoned investors alike. Eastern Mass REIA meets the second Thursday of each month at 6:30 p.m. at the Rockland Holiday Inn. We sponsor educational events, seminars, and mentoring for investors of all levels. We are the number one source in the greater Boston area to get deals done. We are open to the public. Join us for our next meeting. Visit EasternMassREIA.com.
Take the Plymouth Ferry to Provincetown. Cruise in comfort and enjoy your trip across Cape Cod Bay without the hassles of a lengthy ride in Cape traffic. En route, enjoy a narrated tour of historic Plymouth Harbor. Before you know it, you're in Provincetown. Spend the day poking around unique shops and galleries. Enjoy a relaxing lunch in one of P-Town's famous restaurants. Experience Cape Cod's National Seashore. Captain John Boat's large, comfortable vessels feature an enclosed galley with your favorite foods and beverages, including cocktails, and a helpful, friendly crew. So travel to P-Town in style with Captain John Boat's. Reservations call 508-747-2400. That's 508-747-2400. 10 a.m. departures daily from Mayflower to State Pier in Plymouth. Returns at 6 p.m. Take the express route to P-Town. Call 508-747-2400.
Gary Pomerantz, Managing Director of Lexington Wealth Management, is a certified financial planner and investment manager. He has been successfully leading clients through wealth transitions such as retirement, inheritance, or sale of business for over 14 years. If these turbulent times have left you in need of a comprehensive review of your financial strategy and condition, please contact Mr. Pomerantz to set up a complimentary consultation at 800-626-1566. That's 800-626-1566.
Reason number 48 to switch to Geico.
As much as you enjoy the experience, you won't have to go to the post office. We can automatically debit your checking account or even charge your premium to your credit card. It's easy and you never have to worry about mailing your car insurance premium again. But we must warn you, you won't get to use any postage stamps. I hear they're coming out with some pretty cool designs.
For a free rate quote, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
You're listening to On the Money, and the focus of tonight's show is portfolio asset allocation. When you set out to create an investment portfolio, what should you be thinking about? Today we discussed the nuts and bolts of putting together an investment portfolio. First, stocks. We talked about stocks in the last segment, then bonds and cash, and finally putting it all together.
And I'm Hayden Traub. I'm a CFA, have an MBA, and a practicing investment manager for the past 22 years. I'm also the principal of my own firm, Traub Capital Management, based here in Needham. And for more information, you can go to the website, traubcapital.com. And I'm pleased to say we have a guest here tonight, as I mentioned a minute ago. His name is Dan Pierce. He's a vice president of State Street Global Advisors and a portfolio manager in the Global Asset Allocation Group, where they manage balanced portfolios and all types of asset allocation accounts. As a complement to his asset allocation responsibilities, he also works with emerging markets and U.S. equity teams. And prior to assuming his current position, he served as a member of the global strategy team. And Dan's background in terms of education, he has an undergraduate degree from Harvard and a PhD from Brown. So pretty smart guy. Dan, are you there?
I'm here.
We won't hold any of that against you, Dan.
Before we get you involved, I'll just remind people the phone number if they'd like to call in and ask any questions is 888-205-2263. So, Dan, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, my pleasure. Good to be here.
Right before we went to break, the previous session, we were talking about equities, and I didn't know if you had any thoughts on the equity side or if you want to save it till we cover the, you know, in this next session. We're going to talk about fixed income, but if you had any thoughts, you're welcome to chip in here.
Well, I'd just like to support your thoughts, particularly on the international side. You know, we've had a tremendous run here, several decades of really outstanding returns, and even though the outlook in the near term for the U.S. equity markets might be fairly positive based on a few factors, I think we have to get away from assuming that equities are going to do as well as they have done through the 80s and 90s. And that's why I think it's important to look at the international side, particularly the emerging markets. Even though the political risks are admittedly greater, as you talked about, the growth potential is really there relative to the growth that we see going forward in the developed markets.
Right. Yeah, no, I would agree. There's going to be better economic growth overseas, mainly in emerging markets. I think almost everybody agrees with that. And over the long run, there's probably going to be a positive correlation of economic growth and stock market returns, meaning that, you know, as you get better economic growth, you get better stock market returns.
Yeah, the big question really is that because everyone believes it right now. Everyone's throwing the money at emerging markets. Mm-hmm. So let's hope that the real growth can keep up with the expectations.
Yeah, no, fair enough. They may be a little bit ahead of themselves, having just had a terrific first half of 2009. But I think another important ingredient here is to look at finances. Now, there are some emerging countries that are still in a financially risky position, but a lot of the larger emerging countries that you were mentioning a moment ago have really done a tremendous job in terms of building wealth over the last few years, and they're in a much better financial position than perhaps the U.S. or some of the European markets may be in terms of long-term liabilities.
Right. I agree. And speaking of liabilities, I think that's a good lead-in to our discussion on bonds. So what Gary and I are going to do is kind of set the table, if you will, with on the fixed income side, as we did a few minutes ago on the equity side or stock side, just kind of explaining to people what the different pieces are within fixed income, meaning bonds. And then we can get into a discussion about, you know, where's the place to be. And Dan's going to guide us on that.
Absolutely. I mean, one thought I'd like to throw out there, you know, before we even start to talk about bonds and the different types of bonds and what we might keep in the portfolio is for those of us that went to cash or went almost to completely fixed income over the course of the last 7 months before the run-up and then didn't participate in that and probably the run-up that just took place. I just want to point out that actually you for the same reasons that you would have small company exposure in your portfolio, if you had an all large company portfolio, that if you had stocks in your portfolio, if you had 100% bond portfolio and you added just a 20% complement of stocks to the portfolio, over the long course of time, it would serve to decrease the risk in your portfolio and increase the overall return. Now, during the market's decline, it wouldn't have helped, but certainly on the other end of this, in the run-up, it would have really helped you.
Right.
And I think over the long course of time, if we could just get people to move off of the idea they need to be 100% in fixed income to be protected, because there you could lose all of your money to inflation over the long course of time, which is absolutely a loser's bet.
Right.
Whereas at least equities over the long course of time can provide you with the octane that your portfolio needs to outpace inflation over time.
Right. And I think that's key is, you know, not to keep repeating it, but diversification is really the thing that we're talking about here tonight, that you don't want all your eggs in one basket, even if it's bonds, which people perceive as fairly safe, and they can be. And that's maybe a good lead-in for the options on the bond side. So, you know, one area that many people will have exposure to is kind of high quality, meaning, you know, high credit rating type of bonds that have, you know, short and intermediate bonds. And those are going to provide stable return for the most part. I mean, you're going to get periods where they may go down a little bit, but you're not going to get badly hurt typically by those types of bonds.
Right. And short and intermediate meaning 1 to 3 years for short, right? To 10? Is that what you usually?
That's probably typically used. Yeah. I mean, as you get further out, you know, 3 to 10, you know, you can get losses on the bonds. But again, compared to stocks, like if you look back last year, when stocks got crushed, you know, even, you know, some of the investment grade bonds went down, but when they go down, you know, even in a really bad year, they were down maybe like 10%. So it's nothing compared to the pain that people saw in the stock market. And one other thing that I was thinking about on the diversification side is some people think it's kind of the magic answer to everything, that I'm diversified, so therefore I'm okay, I'm not going to lose any money, or I'm diversifying in international stocks or emerging stocks or small cap, and it'll work out. Well, it doesn't always work out. There are periods of time like last year where if you own stock market investments outside of large cap, you generally got hurt even worse. But on the other hand, there will be plenty of times where it works in your favor. And we saw that at the beginning of the decade, 2000 to 2002, when the stock market, meaning the S&P 500, went down 50%. Yet international stocks held up much better. Emerging market stocks held up even better than that, and small cap stocks held up well. So there were lots of places that you got protection by being diversified. And I think that's kind of what our focus is here tonight, is you can't always expect to win by diversifying, but over the long run, it'll pay off well.
Absolutely. We're going to talk about the risks in the bond market. That the first risk that you have to think about is credit risk. It's the risk that a borrower won't be able to repay you. And so it's a length of time that it would take. The credit risk is basically the issue there, is that there are different levels of risk that you could take. There are rating agencies that tell you what the credit quality is of the overall bond issuer. And you need to really pay attention to that. In the market meltdown, individuals really got hurt when they were on the lower end of the credit spectrum. And now actually that lower end of the credit spectrum is what's bringing in the best returns in the overall portfolios out there.
Also inflation risk, and kind of related to that is maturity risk. So inflation risk is the fact that if you buy a bond and there's a fixed payment related coming from that bond every 6 months or quarter or whatever the time frame is, then you the value of that bond could go down if inflation kicks up and interest rates therefore go up. And if you hold it to maturity, you get your money back, no doubt. But if you're worried about the fact that you could have bought a new bond if inflation goes way up. Let's say inflation goes up to 10% and you can buy bonds now for 12%. Well, your bond that you're, let's say you own a treasury bond at 3.5%, you're not going to be too happy when you're only earning that, when you could be out earning, 10 to 12%. So that's the issue related to inflation. And maturity risk is kind of the same issue. It's the fact that if you don't hold these bonds to maturity, that you could wind up absorbing losses, because as interest rates go up, the value of the bonds goes down.
And then I wanted to say too that liquidity risk is an issue too. We ran into this big problem during the market meltdown, that if you had smaller issues, for instance, of municipal bonds or corporate bonds of not even high credit quality, it was difficult to get to sell them at the price of the par value of that bond at the what the bonds are really worth. And so you have to think about that. If you have a bond portfolio, you can't really count on selling those bonds and getting your money back. The shorter and higher credit quality the bonds are in your portfolio, the more likely you will be able to sell them on the market in the event of a market meltdown. But when everything's going down, you can't expect to be able to sell your individual bonds at that point and get your full money back. At that point, actually, you're better off being in a mutual fund than holding individual bonds, because there you can sell at net asset value at whatever price that is on any given day.
Right. And so within fixed income, going on with some other possibilities are things like muni bonds, which are tax-free bonds, some people refer to them as. And there's a whole list of others which we're going to cover when we come back from the break, as well as have Dan educate us on where the best opportunities are. So you're listening to On the Money. If you'd like to call in, it's 888-205-2263. Thanks.
Traub Capital Management is an investment advisor offering investment management and planning for individuals, families, and small businesses. Traub Capital Management's founder, Hayden Traub, is a chartered financial analyst with 22 years of global investing experience. Traub Capital Management is focused on determining the needs for each client and then maximizing returns relative to risk. For a complimentary review of your portfolio, call 781-453-3929 or visit our website at traubcapital.com.
Hello?
Hey, Dave, it's George. How are you doing? I'm calling to ask you a question.
Hey, Margie and I are doing great. We're living in North Hill now and loving it. What's the question?
Sarah and I have been waiting to move to North Hill for some time, but we haven't been able to sell our house. I see your house is still on the market, and yet you've made the move. How did you do that?
Easy. North Hill has something called the Dream Bridge Loan. It provides up to 12 months of interest-free bridge financing. It's a terrific offer. You should call on it.
Interesting. Sarah would be pleased if I told her we can move to North Hill before the house is sold. Thanks for the information.
One other thing, George. North Hill also has a new monthly service fee incentive. Depending on when you come in, you can have your service fee waived 30, 60, and even 90 days. Check that offer out as well.
Thanks, Dave. I'm glad I called you.
To learn more about North Hill's Dream Bridge Loan and Service Fee Incentive Program, call 781-433-6524. 781-433-6524.
Trout Capital Management is an investment advisor offering investment management and planning for individuals, families, and small businesses. Traub Capital Management's founder, Hayden Traub, is a chartered financial analyst with 22 years of global investing experience. Traub Capital Management is focused on determining the needs for each client and then maximizing returns relative to risk. For a complimentary review of your portfolio, call 781-453-3929 or visit our website at traubcapital.com.
Gary Pomerantz, Managing Director of Lexington Wealth Management, is a certified financial planner and investment manager. He has been successfully leading clients through wealth transitions such as retirement, inheritance, or sale of business for over 14 years. If these turbulent times have left you in need of a comprehensive review of your financial strategy and condition, please contact Mr. Pomerantz to set up a complimentary consultation at 800-626-1566. That's 800-626-1566.
Springtime in the backyard. Brought to you with a little help from Ace. For a limited time, buy a Miracle-Gro Liquifeed Kit for only $15.99 and get a $6 mail-in rebate, limit 2. A canopy chair, on sale for $19.99, and more. Use your Ace Rewards card and earn points. Plus, get expert advice to save you time and money. Now that's a value. Hurry in to Ace, the helpful place. Prices good at participating stores while supplies last. See store for details.
You're listening to On the Money, and the focus of tonight's show is portfolio asset allocation. When you set out to create an investment portfolio, what should you be thinking about? Today we discuss the nuts and bolts of putting it together, an investment portfolio for stocks and then bonds and then cash and putting it all together. With us tonight is Dan Pierce. He's a vice president at State Street Global Advisors, and he's an asset allocator par excellence.
So before we went to break, I was talking about municipal bonds, which is an interesting area because right now the yields there are pretty good for high tax bracket people. The other few areas that we wanted to mention before we start talking about, you know, where the better places to invest are include high quality corporate bonds. This would be, you know, kind of blue chip company bonds and, you know, of the higher credit quality that we talked about.
Meaning from AAA all the way down to BBB,
right,
as credit
right.
quality, high credit quality.
The credit ratings that are provided. Yeah, so right. Companies like P&G, McDonald's, to right. name a couple.
AAA being the best and BBB being the worst of the best.
Right. And then for high yield bonds, which is the stuff that isn't good credit quality, that's another option as well. And although it may sound risky, if you do it in a diversified manner, it can often be a good place to invest. It's actually been one of the best places to invest so far right. this year.
There you can end up with equity-like returns, but without the full risk of the equity markets, although they do move in the same direction. They're highly correlated yep. to the equity markets. And but there, what we're doing within our firm is including them as a replacement for equities mm-hmm. because we're worried about the risk on the fixed income side is pulling away from the overall return on the fixed income side in the event of a downturn.
Right. And then on the other end of the spectrum, some of the least risky bonds, which are TIPS, which we've talked about in the past. That stands for Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. Those are bonds that will go up in terms of their value and yield as inflation goes up. So if we do get the inflation that we've talked about in the past, those bonds will hold up much better than traditional bonds. Yeah. And then
the tried and true boring wallflower cash which absolutely is necessary. In 3 to 6 months of living expenses should be set aside in cash. Who cares what you're earning? It needs to be protected. And during the market meltdown, you know, our firms were probably out there saying 1 to 2 years until we understood a depression wasn't coming and that the bond markets and the credit markets would actually start to heal themselves.
Right. And so if, as we mentioned, we have Dan Pierce on the phone, who's a portfolio manager at State Street, focusing on asset allocation. And if you're interested in calling in to ask a question, it would be 888-205-2263. But Dan, we do have one big question for you, among others, which is, you know, all right, where are the best places of the all these different asset classes that we've introduced? You know, where do you see the best opportunities and why?
Well, I certainly think, sticking with the fixed income theme for a minute, that the credit markets are still very interesting. They've had a tremendous run already this year after the credit crisis peaked, last December. But you're still getting very generous terms on investment grade and also high yield. And I would focus specifically on the investment grade. The yield on average is maybe a little bit below 6% right now. But in this market, that's still very attractive relative to what you get on treasuries, relative to what you get on cash. High yield is okay for folks who are willing to accept a little bit more risk. But we do think that defaults are going to continue to rise because we're still in a very challenging economic environment. And one other area that I would mention, to go back to the non-U.S. markets again, you can get yields in the 7 to 8% area on dollar-denominated emerging markets debt. And given the fact that their finances have improved so much, I think that's an area that folks can look at. And you can get these through either open-end or closed-end mutual funds, and maybe a very good yield enhancement for a portfolio.
Yep, we actually have some of our clients there, and so we would agree with that. Yeah, yep. We like emerging market debt and some of the other debt that you mentioned as well, yeah. So on the high yield front, you use the term default. So default means that they don't make their payments, right? That's the risk.
For whatever reason, the company could file bankruptcy. Right. They fail to make a payment. They use up the grace period. They just don't have the resources to refinance. And the bond value obviously tends to drop very quickly in those circumstances.
Right. Isn't some of that default rate already built in, though, by virtue of the price that you're purchasing those bonds at?
Well, that's exactly right, because of course you're always going to be getting a slightly higher yield in this area of the marketplace. But the premium that you're getting has contracted significantly this year. It's still quite generous relative to a longer-term history, but it's unclear that we're going to be able to get through this period without some of the weaker concerns that have issued this kind of debt still faltering.
Right. The premium you refer to is the higher yield, the yield relative to safer bonds.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So would you argue that sticking to higher credit quality, lower credit quality debt, so the sort of the higher echelons of the low credit quality debt would make sense?
Yeah, and to be sure, in our asset allocation accounts, we still have an overweight position in high-yield bonds, but as they've run so much, we're taking a little bit more cautious view at this point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And let's say for a portfolio that had 50% stocks, 50% bonds, just roughly, how would you divvy that up, you know, mentioning maybe some of the things that we talked about tonight in terms of different asset classes?
On the bond side?
Well, yeah, sure. Within bonds, if you had half your money in bonds, how might you divide that up?
Yeah, I would be a little bit more leery of treasuries here, a little bit more leery of tips. Tips are all right, but they just aren't yielding that much right now, and you've already had a rebound in inflation expectations. So I would be very comfortable having something more than half of the allocation in credit risk of one form or another, whether it's emerging markets or high yield. But for most folks, I would focus on that investment grade part, because I think you do want to be relatively conservative overall on your fixed income allocation.
Now, what if you've got a taxable investment? So you wouldn't necessarily want to be in corporates.
Munis are okay too. Although we've got a lot of states with a lot of issues in this country right now. I don't see that non-payment is going to be an issue in the near future. But I think that's something that we have to keep in the back of our minds. I mean, you see, with California issuing IOUs right now just to pay their bills, it could be risky down the road.
Right. And what about on the stock side, Dan? Where do you see good opportunities in terms of the asset classes we discussed earlier?
Well, I can go to the asset classes in a minute, but one thing that really strikes me here is one who has always enjoyed income investing and believed a lot in income investing. Some of the dividend yields available right now are very appealing. So when you look at what's available in terms of treasury bonds and even in terms of some of the high-grade corporates, you can find equities that give you yields that are larger than treasuries and in the same ballpark as the high-grade corporates. So this means you have to dig a little deeper within the asset class, but for example, you look in the utility sector, you look in the telecom sector, you can find the kinds of generous yields that we really haven't been used to in terms of equity investing. We've been living in an era where equity yields have tended to be much less than these other alternatives, and now you can really find within the equity markets some very attractive yield opportunities. And I would add that that goes particularly in Europe, where the yields tend to be a little bit higher and there's not as many technology stocks. And even in emerging markets, the yields are reasonable at this point.
Reasonable, like, can you give us a ballpark, like 3 or 4%?
Probably closer to between 2 and 3.
2 and 3.
But again, you can find individual markets that are considerably higher than that. You know, yeah, they're just under 3 right now, given the rally they had. But given the fact that their fundamental outlook longer term is pretty attractive, that's not bad vis-a-vis the S&P, which is in the same neck of the woods.
Right, right. Okay. And going past the dividend and income issue, do you have a preference these days for, say, emerging market stocks as opposed to developed market or versus the U.S. market?
Yeah, as we discussed, certainly the long-term outlook for emerging markets is very good. But even in the near term, our models show that emerging markets are still in a pretty good position here for the rest of 2009. We look at a variety of time frames, and despite the fact that they seem to be fairly popular, they still seem to be healthy on a relative valuation basis, on a relative performance basis. So we still like them. You have some emerging markets that benefit if resources do well, and you have others that benefit if oil prices come down, as they have recently. So emerging markets seem to be holding in reasonably well here, and we're comfortable with an overweight there. We're currently underweight EAFE, the Europe and Japan that you talked about earlier, but there too, remarkable cheapness relative to history. So we want to keep an eye on those markets as having potential. Okay. Right now, we think the dollar can probably do a little bit better in the short term, but if and when we get to the point where the dollar starts to weaken again, we definitely want to look into emphasizing Europe and Japan more heavily.
Okay. Dan, thanks for joining us this evening. We gotta run, but just letting you know, you've been listening to On the Money. I'm Hayden Traub.
And I'm Gary Pomerantz. If you'd like to check out our website, it's www.lexingtonwealth.com. To reach Hayden's website, it's
traubcapital.com. Please join us next Monday from 6 to 7.
The topic will be long-term care investing.
For the latest financial headlines or to contact the host, go to bostonbusinessradio.com and join us every day at 6 p.m. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of their respective parties and not those of this show's producers or the station. You're listening to On the Money on WBNW AM 1120 and the Money Matters Network.